Hello, critics, non-critics, and friends. Welcome to the Filmopics podcast, where we take a glance into blockbusters, indie films, and everything in between. I'm your host, Christian, and today I'm actually joined by a special guest of the podcast, friend of the show, Amanda, a.k.a. AMX NDA Reviews on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd. And today we're here to present our spoiler review of Dune Part 2, directed by Denis Villeneuve, and has a whopping cast, written by Denis Villeneuve, as well as Frank Herbert being on as a credit.
He's the author.
Credited Frank Herbert. I'm sorry, guys. It's been a very long day. And we also have John Spates joining the writing crew as well. And yeah, if you haven't seen Dune Part 2 yet, I'd be very shocked why you're even listening to this. But, you know, if you've seen it, you already know who's in the movie. We got Zendaya, Timothée Chalamet, Rebecca Ferguson, Christopher Walken, Florence Pugh. This is a stacked cast, and it's fantastic. If you want to check out our spoiler-free review, we do have a separate episode of that out on the podcast, and I'll actually link it in the episode notes of this podcast for people who may want to just like easily redirect to it all together. But Amanda, it's been a while since you've been on the show. How you been? What's going on?
I know, it's been so long. I don't even remember. What was the last one?
The last one you've been on?
Yeah. was it last year, I'm pretty sure.
Was it that 90s show?
That was last January.
Oh, no. That was last January. you came on for the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
That's what it was. I was like, it was last year. I'm pretty sure I did another book. Yeah, it was that, and I think we did Killers, too. We did Killers of the Flower Moon.
I think you did as well,
Back to back.
See, I forgot we did that one.
Yeah, it was back to back, but I'm happy to be back with another book adaptation. But yeah, things are good. I started a new job, and I'm just, I'm just balancing life now and seeing how things can go for me and just restructuring things, doing a lot of reading, and it's been good.
You read way more than me. I need to catch up on my reading. It's been bad.
It's like multitasking. So I have one on my Kindle that I bring to work, one like paperback, and then one audiobook. So it's like three books a month that I'm doing, and I don't know how I've been doing it, but it's been fun. So it's interesting.
I have a question. So for us audio book listeners out there, do you consider that as reading?
Of course I do. I think you retain the information differently, but it's still like in your head and it's giving you a full story. And I think listening to a narrator that's actually good will make you really appreciate the book in a different way. So yeah, no, it's definitely considered reading because people, I think, have different reading styles as well. So that's another thing. It's like, if you're a visual learner, like you just take things in differently. So yeah,
it's weird. Cause like for me, like I used to read a lot when I was younger, but like now that I'm older, it's like, I still own like the books of like, even for like the audiobooks that I have. So like I'm reading Fourth Wing. Yes. I need to start back up because I was really into it. And then like, life and stuff happens, so I'm trying to get back into it. But I'm not only just listening to the audible, I'm listening to the graphic audio of Fourth Wing. It's like a movie.
Dramatized version. Yeah,
the dramatized version. It is
nice,
fantastic. I like this a lot. And I do like the story. It's getting really good.
It's so good. I'm so happy you started reading it.
It's getting spicy.
Oh yeah. There's a little bit of spice. I forgot to tell you that, but there's a little bit of spice.
No, it's totally. Because my friend was like, my other friend, he was like, you should probably stick to Fourth Wing instead of the Court of Thorns and Roses. He's like, He's like, it's something else. But it, like, he likes it. But he was just like, you know, he's into it. So he thought, yeah, I would enjoy Fourth Wing more. And I am. I got to buy the second part of the graphic audio. Yes. I think it already came out. But like it now, did. I'm afraid I can't go back to just like a standard audio listening experience.
That's interesting. I think I've only done dramatized versions. Really? Yeah.
They take a little bit longer to come out, but
it's worth it. Yeah. And unless I haven't, I think I did one or two dramatized. But it's a different experience, which is awesome that it's getting you back into, you know, the audiobooks and it's helping, you know. It's really good.
But definitely, like, even if it's a non-dramatization version, like a non-graphic audio, if it's just, like, the standard Audible, depending on who the author is, he can really get you into it. So, like, when I, for The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, I forgot who the guy was, but, like, he basically sounded like President Snow as if he was, like, a younger guy. And I was I liked his voice. It was pretty cool. He didn't do the voices, but still, it was pretty awesome. But Tatiana Maslany, she is the audio narrator for The Hunger Games, for the first three Hunger Games books.
I didn't know that. That's so cool.
She does a great job. Yeah. She tries to go low with like Fida and stuff. I'm like, it's so funny.
She's adorable. I love her.
It's hilarious. But I've yet to check out Dune. I have the audiobook.
It's a long one.
I know. I have the book too. I was like, wow, this is massive. And this is like, only the beginning.
I think it's 864 pages from what I remember. I think it's still the longest book that I've read because I read it during lockdown. Yeah, I read it during lockdown and I was like, oh my God, like it's never ending. It's so dense. It's so dense. Yeah. And that's why when like you watch Dune, more so part two, I think they do a better job in breaking down the themes, and the story, for the audience, because the book is like, I got lost so many times trying to understand the politics. And I do think that, not to compare it to Star Wars, but the political jargon in Star Wars in comparison to the Dune films, it's like night and day. Like I can understand everything that's happening in Dune one, part one and part two, but then trying to understand the politics in Star Wars is like, I can't even register them at all.
That's interesting you say that. And I think I actually agree. And I don't know why, because you know, for the longest time, it's like, okay, like the Empire in Star Wars was just very like, they're the bad guys. I'm like, well, why? Like, I know what they're kind of sort of trying to do. But honestly, it wasn't until I started watching Andor, I was like, oh, that makes more sense. Yeah. Which is funny because Dune's like the grandfather of like space fantasy, like sci-fi, much like Lord of the Rings is for high fantasy. So it's like, you don't get Star Wars without Dune. Yeah, so that's true. That's the best part about it. And I'm like, it's really like the original Star Wars, but I've been watching like so many videos. I'm like I want to read the book, but I'm like, man, that author, not the author, the narrator for the audiobook. I'm like,
see, I would actually, I know. And that's why I suggest like actually reading it, because you're going at your own pace. And I think you'll be able to like understand it more. And I've been telling people, because like there's 20 books in this series, like there are spinoffs and there's sequels, like the original saga basically I think is like 6 books. And what I was told, like I did research on it, you'd only really have to read Dune and then Dune Messiah for Paul's arc. Right. And that's it. Like you don't even have to go past that. So even if you just want to read like Dune Messiah after this and call it a day, like you're fine. Cause technically those are the only films that Denis is going to actually make. And like those are, then I think, there's this Sisterhood of Dune, which is the show on HBO, and that's a spinoff too. Yeah.
And there's also, well, I know I think after Dune Messiah, I think Children of Dune is the next book after. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, huh, interesting. But yeah, I just thought it was pretty interesting before we kind of like dive into the actual Dune Part 2 spoilers. But yeah, I would love to get your perspective, your reactions of Dune Part 2. You know, this is the spoiler cast, so we're just kind of talking, you know, shooting the shots and, you know, just talking about what we loved about the movie. We already, you know, we could just talk about whatever. It was so hard to do it for a non-spoiler. I was like, there's so much here.
Imagine.
Yeah. And it's like, even like, there was so much I found out throughout the videos, but I'm going to shut up now. What are your initial thoughts on Dune Part 2? Spoilers included.
Yeah, I thought that the film was brilliant. I think Denis Villeneuve has mastered the sci-fi genre. I've been a huge fan of his work for a while now. And I think that if you watch all of his films and then watch Dune Part 2, and I said this in my review, it feels like a culmination of everything that he's done. Like, you can pull from Arrival, you can pull from Blade Runner 2049, and you can pull from his other films and see that he incorporated all of that in Dune Part 2. And Denis is so very talented that he can create this grand space opera and still grounded in very human themes. And that's what we get with Dune Part 2 more so than Dune Part 1. And I think that I was just amazed by the scale of this film. And I said that with Dune Part 1 as well. And if you hopefully watched it on 70mm and IMAX, you're going to be like just amazed by everything that Greg Fraser did with the cinematography, and then, you know, the production design, the costuming, like everything is just so rich. And then there's so much depth to these characters as well. And I think that every single person in this cast gave incredible performances. And they worked together extremely well. I was just very impressed with this. I could have sat there for 4 hours. It felt so short to me, and I did not feel this runtime. Whereas with Dune Part 1, I did feel the runtime just because I did read the book and I didn't know where it was going to end. Right. So that was the only thing where I gave Dune Part 1 4.5 just because of the pacing issue. And then Part 2 just had incredible pacing throughout, never wavered, never a dull moment, and everything was really quick. And I felt like in comparison to the book, especially the second half of the book, Denis picked out the bones of it, and it was still meaty enough to actually give us a full like 2-hour and 48-minute film. So I think it was just exceptional all around, and it's one of the best sequels ever made.
I'm glad you said that, because I agree. I agree it is one of the best sequels ever made. There was actually a tweet that I saw. Someone said that they loved Dune Part 2, but they didn't consider it a sequel because it's the second part to a single story. And I was like,
it's still considered a sequel terminology wise. So
like nothing about what a sequel requires it to be a story in and of itself. Like, because you can say the same thing with Star Wars. It's like, okay, the original Star Wars trilogy, like that's telling one giant story. You're just breaking it up into three parts.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that when it comes to a part two or a sequel, and this can be said about Across the Spider-Verse as well, Dune Part 1 technically did not end on a cliffhanger. I felt it didn't end on a cliffhanger. Like, it was like it ended, and like you could have just had part one and it would have ended with like, this is just the beginning. It's like, okay, cool. Like, we're not even getting a part two. That's fine. Like, you can end the film there. But like something with Across the Spider-Verse and even Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, like there's such a stark difference where Across the Spider-Verse ended on a massive cliffhanger. You know what I mean? So then when the part two comes out, that's going to feel like those movies are combined, where Dune Part 1 and Part 2 is just not, it doesn't feel that way for me. Because even with Part 2, like it ended, but it still doesn't feel like a cliffhanger to me with that ending. But I know what happens because of Dune Messiah. So it just, I don't know. It's a fine line of what like guidelines you kind of use when it comes to like a part one, part two, or a sequel, I guess.
Yeah. And it's also like, you know, what was it? Kill Bill Volume 1 and Volume 2, mm-hmm. where Quentin Tarantino's like, yeah, it's one movie. And then everyone's like, well, yeah, but I bought two movie tickets, so it's two separate ones. And I'm like, mm-hmm. well, even with like Lord of the Rings, like Fellowship of the Ring, you could technically like,
it ended.
I don't know. It technically ends. Yeah. But it's like the story's not over, so it's like mm-hmm. it's weird. I mean, I forgot who had tweeted that, but like I see what or where they were coming from, but mm-hmm. you have to, like, if that's your way of thinking, then no trilogy, no movie like sequel, like The Dark Knight, like that's not really considered a sequel then, if you're saying that Dune Part 2 isn't a sequel. And it's like, yeah. well, all these are telling stories is a part one and two and three, you know, beginning, middle, mm-hmm. and ends. But yeah. yeah, it's weird. That's pretty, pretty odd. But yeah, I just thought I'd yeah. bring it up. I was like, huh, like, because some people do think that way. Because it's like
they do. I mean, I also feel like people need something to complain about.
That too, always.
You know, and we see that quite a bit. So I think that's why people are like, but this movie is like so overhyped and it's like, let's nitpick. And I think that's what people are doing now. It's not even been out like a week and people are already like, it's so overhyped. It's so overrated. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, sure.
For me, it feels like Dune Part 2 has been out for like over a month. Technically, for me, because I saw it on February 20th. And I couldn't really talk about it with anyone. And now I can. Yeah. Now we can. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I watched it on the 25th. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see it in 70mm IMAX?
Oh, hell yes, I did. Same. That was an experience. That I had went downtown to my screening, and it was completely sold out. And that IMAX holds 400 people.
Yeah. Wow.
Crazy. Yeah.
That's insane. I took my friend Colin. Shout out to Colin. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Hey. Colin out there. Follow them on TikTok. They do good stuff. It was my second time seeing it. Colin's first time seeing it. Mm-hmm. And luckily we live in a city where there is a 70mm IMAX theater. Yes. And it like literally we were trying to figure out where to go on like Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. And literally every single IMAX screening showtime was packed. Luckily, we found two seats right next to each other, kind of like towards the middle. I was actually kind of surprised. But yeah, like every single like seat was just filled. And same. I feel like with this movie, I'm like, it's truly something special because it's like it not only enhances the first film, mm-hmm. but you know, it's a sequel that builds upon the events of its predecessor, but it also surpasses it. And it's like, it's shining even brighter and brighter. Like the mm-hmm. storytelling, not even just the storytelling, like the score, the writing, the cinematography. I don't know who they hired.
But Greg Fraser, my friend, Greg Fraser.
Every time I go to Arrakis, whether it's Dune Part 1, Part 2, it literally feels like a real place.
It's incredible.
Like, you can like there's usually, you know, with some movies you can tell, oh yeah, like that's some spotty CGI. Like you can't tell you can't. Here. I'm like
even them like floating down from the spacecrafts, like it was just so graceful. Like you can't even not that you would tell that there are wires, but you're like, yeah, this guy can totally just do that. And it was so believable. Like I was blown away by so much. And like to even speak on that. Whenever, because there's more action scenes in part two than there is in part one, the stealth of the Fremen.
Yes.
Oh my God. Like I was like, I got goosebumps every single time they came out of the sand or they were just coming out of nowhere. I was just blown away. Like, and you know what I loved that Denis did? I know like I'm jumping all over the place, but, what I love that Denis did, and he's talked about it, and people have given him kind of like some shit for it, but he let these scenes breathe, and there was like silence on screen majority of the time. And I think to have silence on like a 70mm screen is just unreal work from him because he's letting the visuals speak for themselves. And that's why it just pulls something different from the audience, because there was tension and like in so many different scenes and they were barely saying anything.
Yeah. It's the visual storytelling that Denis is able to pull off. And even like this, the subtlety of like just the production, even with like Chani, and like, I'm not sure if anyone really knows this for any listeners out there. I learned this from a YouTube video, but I think it's so cool. So when the Fremen fall in love, they wear blue.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure. And I didn't notice this on my first watch, because there are scenes where Chani is wearing like a blue like headband or like a bandana. Like sometimes she has it like on her head, sometimes it's on her like on her left or right arm. So it's like signifying that she has fallen in love with Paul. And during that last scene, no blue bandana to be found. She wears it like not the entire time. It's like in certain scenes and other scenes she doesn't. But yeah, I was like, oh, does she wear it? Like, as in she still loves Paul? Because like it was a pretty big portrayal. But this man gave up. So this is like an episode of Love Is Blind. It was crazy. He was like, yeah, I'll marry the emperor's daughter. I was like, that was a twist. And
it's
not only that, I didn't know that Paul was half Harkonnen. Because I'm like, there has to be a twist in here somewhere. I'm like, why is Paul like so important? But, you know, more so is his mother's lineage than his own. And I'm like, oh, so he's also Harkonnen. I'm like, this is crazy. I'm not sure how how in Game of Thrones where it's like, okay, you know, you're half Targaryen, half Snow. But if your father's a Snow, then, you know, or not a Snow. My gosh.
A Stark.
Stark. Yeah, Stark. Thank you. Yeah.
It's okay.
So it's like, it's like, oh, he's a Snow. Oh my God, this is impossible. So it's like if your father, you take your father's last name, like, you know, you are House Stark, or if your father's Targaryen or House Tully, things of that nature. So I'm not sure how it works in Dune, but this is very much like Game of Thrones in space.
It's insane. Yeah, it's so crazy. But the thing, I'm going to speak on that moment, because I felt like it was so underplayed that, like, I don't think people even registered that he was a Harkonnen, because they didn't play it like it's such a massive reveal. It was, it wasn't even like done that way. I felt like it was a bit too subtle for my liking. But the grandfather line was just like, oh my God, he's going to kill his, his granddad and all of that. I just think that with Paul as a character, I hope that people, like, how can I put this? That they don't like him. You're not supposed to like Paul moving forward. Like, there's a massive change in him when he drinks the blue juice. And you can see that. And I think people who, like, I'm not saying the general audience won't pick up on it, because obviously there's visual cues and all of that. But I think for those who just like didn't expect him to be bad, was like, what is happening? It's like, no, dude, like, you can clearly see that there's a prophecy. Like, the prophecy is not supposed to be a good thing from the Bene Gesserits. Like, you have to, anyways, it's a whole thing, but he's not a good person. He's not a good person. That's it. And then the love triangle at the end.
Yeah.
My God, when everyone bows down and then it's just like Princess Arulin, Chani, and Paul standing up, I'm like, Denis, what are you doing? Like, it was just crazy. Intense. Yeah. And like the battle, Fade Rotha, we gotta talk about Austin Butler. Like, the man, I'm a little disappointed
he didn't come in with his Elvis impression.
You know what? It was there.
It was there a little lines, bit. It was. It like, was. I noticed.
I was like,
it.
Austin. Austin. What are you doing, man?
It's like, oh, you're my cousin?
Yeah, that was the one.
Is he my cousin? Really?
The I was like, fact oh, that you, yeah, you called it. That was the line. I was like, oh, no. I was like, no.
That's it. That's it. There it is. No, but yeah, we could definitely talk about, because are the Harkonnens, are they bald in the novel, or was that just more of a visual change?
From my knowledge, they were like from what I remember they were, yeah. I think they all like look in like the same, like they're all in unison.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Yeah.
But what I really liked, because again, Greg Fraser and the costuming department, they had also like color cues where like, if you were going to the Emporium with the emperors, it was all like grays and blues, like to show that they're royalty, and like silvers. And then you had like, obviously it was black and white for the Harkonnens to show how crazy they are basically. And it was just like really deep, dark colors. And yeah. then obviously with, what's it called? With, the Fremen, it was all like browns and greens. And like, I painted my nails, for the color palette of the Fremen, just to match. But I think that that just enhanced all of the performances as well. And that you could tell where you were before they even showed who was on screen, which is really cool. And then the Harkonnens, they had the infrared that they used. Greg Fraser wanted to use that for the battle sequence in the arena for Fade Rotha. And that's why it looked the way it did. And it was so sick. So the fact that they played with like color palettes and textures like that was really cool.
Yeah. The Black Sun was like insane. I was like, wow, this is crazy. And seeing it a second time, it's, you know, like obviously the first time you're trying to absorb all the information. You're like, oh my God, what's happening? You're like, I don't know what's happening, but I absolutely love it. But yeah, even the second time I was like, wow, just like the subtle differences, like even with the Harkonnens, like the Black Sun, and with Austin Butler's character, it was like he remind, like everyone says like the Joker. I'm like, I can definitely see the Joker. Me as like an anime like weeb fan, I was thinking like Frieza, because like I was like, he just looks like him, but he acts like a total savage. But I love the I don't know, it's kind of like between Paul and what is Austin Butler's name again?
It's Fade Rotha.
Fade Rotha. Thank you.
Fade Rotha. Yeah.
No, they're really like two sides of the same coin, because I remember, again, from a video, Paul was, well, and they actually mentioned this in the first film, because Paul was originally supposed to be a girl. Well, his mother was supposed to originally have a girl, but then I think she bore his father a son. So out of love. So it's like Paul was originally supposed to marry Fade Rotha. Kind of, am I saying that right? I don't know. I got this from a video. So I'm not sure how accurate that is. That can you not say anything without talking about Doom Messiah? Or is that?
Yeah, I can't say anything.
All right, blink twice for yes. No, I'm joking.
I can't say anything.
Okay, that's fine.
I do get that, because it's a lot of like incest that goes on in Dune, and it's clearly with
this what is Game you of reveal Thrones.
Of Paul. It is Game of Thrones. Like, Paul's a Harkonnen, and you're like, heh? Like, what are you talking about that Paul's a Harkonnen? But even like Fade Rotha with his like mommy issues that were evident, and then that's what they said about him. I think the lineage is tarnished. And that's all I can really say.
That's fine. Because Paul being Paul, I know that kind of disrupts a lot of stuff within for the Bene Gesserit's plans. But for any anime fans out there, Paul reminds me of Aaron Yeager from Attack on Titan. But I'm just going to say that, because if you've seen all of Attack on Titan, there's a lot of similarities between Aaron goes through a massive change. It's this weird thing. I can't talk too much on it, but the Paul that we see it towards the end of part two, or just Paul in general. Yeah. Especially after he drinks the water of life. The water of life. It's very similar for Aaron Yeager. Yes. I'm like, he reminds me, if I'm 100%. But yeah, it's crazy how, and like, I agree with what you were talking about. Like, I don't even think that was a big twist of Paul being Harkonnen on his mother's side, because we still don't know, like, okay, his own mom didn't even know until she drank the water of life. And now we got Paul's little sister, blanking on her name as well.
But what was her name? Now I'm blanking.
Because I think in the... Because is she originally born in the Dune book? The original book? No?
No.
Yes, no?
Okay. No, it's technically...
That makes sense. It's fine.
It's like the beginning... Like, she's pregnant, and then, right. like, you do hear it, like, a while, like, at the end, but then it's heavy in Messiah. So they kind of, like...
Messiah must be really good. You're like, oh, kids.
Christian. When I mean, I prefer Dune Messiah to Dune, reading it. Because it's really? Like, I'm talking about like, shit hits the fan in Messiah. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy. Like, it's insane.
I'm excited because, like, what's you mean? Know, the Holy War is beginning. And it's like, everything that's happening with Paul, with him being... this prophet, it's Dune is so, this even part two in itself, it's still like relevant in like today's terms, because I think the book came out around like 60 years ago, but it's effectively, you know, using this like prophecy, this religion of the Fremen to like control them, and Shani's like, no, this is how they control us. It's just moving from one dictator to another. But because there's so many scenes in part one that we see that we don't see in part two, but I think it's more of the flashes of like visions of the future where there's like one with Chani and Paul. Like, I think they're in Caladan, like Paul's home world, and they're like looking down.
Yeah.
Kind of like, I was like, what is, it's so crazy. Like, I need to start reading. But, like, I want to read Dune Messiah, but I don't, because I want to experience the movie first and then go back and read the book. But I don't know. It's crazy.
Heavy. And the sister's name is Aaliyah or Aaliyah.
Aaliyah. I think
it's
Aaliyah.
Aaliyah or something. Yeah, or one of them. Yeah. And then we see that it's Anya Taylor-Joy. And at first, like...
I was going to ask you if do you actually consider that a spoiler or not?
Well, she shouldn't have gone to the premiere. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, why are you there? And then she does have, like, one scene in the movie. And I'm like, why would you go, man? Like, that's such a surprise. Because technically, like I said, it bleeds into Dune Messiah where they're talking and everything. And then she's, like, born and all of that. It just didn't make any sense to have Anya there. Anyways, it is a spoiler. It technically is, so... Yeah.
I got you. Yeah. At first, I was like, because I always thought that she was there because, like, you know, the reported findings or whatever. And I was like, whatever. And then apparently a lot of people were very disappointed when I think it was either Hollywood Reporter or Variety had, like, made that. But, like, it's kind of like if they wanted to keep it a secret. Yeah, probably she shouldn't have gone to it.
Yeah, period. Like, girl, you're not even like credited until like the 40th person in. Like, it just like, what are you? Don't go. It's supposed to be like a cameo. It's supposed to be a secret. Because I didn't know they were gonna show. It was great. I love her. And then seeing it in context of the film, I'm like, yeah, she would totally be like Timmy's sister. Like, it makes sense. Like, there is it's some kind of resemblance for Paul. Like, I like that, especially with Rebecca Ferguson too as the mother. Like, it makes complete sense. But yeah, I really wish they would have kept that. Like, even the talking fetus and showing the fetus on screen, I'm like, I get it. I think it was a bit much because I really like the scenes. I liked it more where like Lady Jessica was speaking to her.
Yeah,
I really
loved that was those cool scenes. Too. I did
it
too.
It was sick. Yeah.
It was freaky, but like, especially when she takes the water of life and like the fetus eyes, like I was like, oh my god, what's happening? Is this gonna be like a super baby or something?
Yeah, it's like it's a super baby for sure. I just there were some things where I'm like, it went too far, but I guess you had to do it to show it. Yeah.
In case people didn't catch it around the first time that she was pregnant in part one.
I mean, like, he literally says it, so.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing.
It's subtle. It's very subtle. Yeah, like, it's very more subtle. Visual storytelling. Mm-hmm. And that's why, like, it was insane when it's, I don't know, like, the way that they're able to kind of, like, tell two stories almost and kind of have them converge, because, like, the final fight towards the end. And Paul just, like, it was interesting because, you know, obviously he didn't want to go south. He didn't want to become this prophet. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I wasn't sure. I'm like, man, like, is it just a coincidence that he is able to do all these things? But he's basically like a male Bene Gesserit because no male has survived the water, like drinking the water of life. So it's
Yeah, there's a name for him. I forgot his name now. It's not the Lisa. It's not. No, that's Usul's the Fremen name. And then that's Lisa right. Nalgaib is the prophet. Mm. And then Muad'Dib is his name that he takes up as like the desert mouse. Like that's his name.
Right.
But I'm going to butcher this. The Kwazitsa Haderach is technically the male Bene Gesserit. Yeah, there's a name for it. I butchered it. But like that. Yeah, there hasn't been one, like you said. So now he has all of these names. And I remember reading the book and I'm like, but who is this still him? Like, why are they not calling him like a certain name or whatever? But yeah, I guess it depends who meets him, who sees him. Right. And then they just adapt something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the interesting part. Even with like Javier Bardem, like he's the ultimate hype man for Paul, you know? Like he's
Like he became my favorite character after watching this. Like he's phenomenal in this. I loved him. Comic relief for sure. Like he was so good.
Yeah, it was like subtle comic relief. And it's like
yeah, it was funny.
Yeah, and I like how they were able to you see the Fremen like facing like you know the emperor or just not even the emperor's men but the Harkonnen's men or even the final fight between Freyd and Paul towards the end where it's like I like how in Dune and I feel like we kind of get this in Star Wars sometimes or not even just Star Wars just other properties or just other stories where there is you know this is the fantasy element like this is like the sci-fi fantasy so because it's like it's set in space but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's sci-fi like because I identify Star Wars more being more fantasy than just a straight up sci-fi because like we're really getting into the weeds now with Dune Part Two like you know the holy war is about to begin but I like how you have like these fights where no one feels superhuman. Like, anyone can die at any moment. It's not like, you know, the final fight or the final duel towards the end of this film where it's like cousin versus cousin. Like, no one felt invincible.
No.
Because you have, so like you have Paul who's, this is like technically the second time he's been reborn. Because I would say the first time he got reborn is when he killed that one Fremen towards the end.
Oh, Janice. Janice. Yeah.
So it's like, because he never killed a person before then, but we didn't know that until then. But he's had like the best stewards, the best teachers. So like he knows his way around the blade, but he didn't feel invincible.
Yeah.
And that's what I really liked about it.
And I think that that's a testament too to like Austin Butler's performance.
Yeah.
Because Fade Rotha was like lethal. Like he sliced that one girl's neck just for like, that she opened her mouth basically. Yeah. Right. So I think I like, and then he almost like, I think he beat what's his name too, Dave Bautista's character.
Yeah.
He, like punched him or whatever, banged his head on.
I think
like,
that was his brother or is that his cousin? I can't remember.
I think that's also cousin. His cousin. I think it's a cousin.
Yeah.
Cause it's both nephews. So I think it's, I don't know. But I think that you had to show how like crazy Fade Rotha was to like have that battle even mean like, oh my God, Paul could get stabbed and die. But like Paul also has the Bene Gesserit power and he's like, okay, maybe like he'll kill Fade in a different way. And you know what I mean? And use the voice in that case. You don't know what that fight was going to be, but Christian, the hand to hand combat.
Great. It was fantastic. I loved it so much. I'm like, I will take this over a lightsaber battle any day of the week.
Literally, like, that
was amazing. I was like,
and the sound design, like you could hear like the blades, you could hear the contact, and it's probably like my favorite fight in like a very long time. It was so good.
I agree. Yeah. That was phenomenal. And like, you know, it wasn't too long, it wasn't too short. But it's like, I feel like a lot of people also underestimate Paul, because when he killed his first kill at the end of part one, they're like, he was like, oh, you know, it's he's facing up against a Fremen. Like they view Paul as just like this prissy boy kind of guy, where it's like, oh, you know, he's just a rich son, daughter of a, or son of like a steward, or like of a great house. But he knows his way around the blade, and it's like he can just... He's good. Like, you know, he's going to take a few blows, but it's like he's going to get the job done.
Yeah. And yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
It makes me laugh that people are like, Timmy can't be an action star. And I'm like, this isn't him being an action star, though. Like, it's perfectly cast for exactly what you just said. So I think that people saying that, like, he can't fight, and it's like, no, but he can. Like, that's his purpose. He's supposed to be, like, this nobleman's son. Or, like, he's supposed to be like that. He's, like, the Duke's son. It's like, he can fight. Like you said, so it's just, it makes me laugh when everyone's like impressed with Timothée Chalamet doing literally anything. And I'm like, we've been new. He can do everything. Like, can we just put some respect on my boy's name? It's so crazy that it took people like this long to respect him as an actor. And I'm like, he's been putting in the work. It bothers me.
Yeah, it's just because he's not in a comic book movie or like, you know, another.
Yeah.
Like, but Dune's, this is like perfect for him. Well, like, I mean, I've always liked Timmy. I haven't watched Wonka yet. I still got to watch that one.
So
but
good.
I hear he's really good in it. But it's like, yeah, like he's like literally all these actors have had like very like amazing careers. And it's for like sure. Even like Florence Pugh has been like everywhere. Like, I think my first film I saw with her was like, I think it was either Fighting for My Family, and then I watched her in Lady Macbeth, because that was like one of her.
Yeah.
So like I've pretty much watched like every film that Florence Pugh has ever been in, but like even Timothée Chalamet, it's like he's good. Like, just because he's not in, you know, Star Wars or whatever, like he can get the job done. Like, he's a phenomenal actor.
Definitely.
So it's like, and even this, I don't know. There's something. He's very intimidating.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, he's a scrawny guy or whatever, but it's like, he's still.
There's so much power.
Yeah. It's crazy. I was like, okay.
Yeah. He brings a level of intensity that like you normally wouldn't get from someone that looks like that, I think. So that's why it's really surprising. I said this in a tweet, actually, that you have Dune Part 2 and you have young Hollywood like being incredible in these roles in Dune Part 2, that it's so special because once their careers like skyrocket, it already has because they cemented themselves, but it's just like you're never going to get them all together in a movie once they actually like have the longevity of a Kate Winslet or a Leonardo DiCaprio. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's going to be very different. So that's why it's even more special to have them all together here.
I agree. Yeah. And Hollywood's definitely changed a lot. Cause it's like, you know, we're seeing the like beginnings of a lot of these actors' careers, like Zendaya, Florence Pugh.
Yeah.
Rebecca Ferguson's been around for a bit, but like still, well, heck, even with Dave Bautista, cause he's like, now getting into like the acting stuff, but heck, I mean, Austin Butler came a long way from iCarly, so
he did. Oh my god, no, I know he's doing so well for himself. I really do think that Elvis opened the doors for him, and I'm just really happy that he got to like strut his stuff and he's taking some unique projects on.
Yeah, and I'm happy that, like, I mean, obviously, people are gonna know him for Elvis, but like, I'm happy he's. Like, a lot of these actors, even like Zendaya and Florence Pugh, like they've been in the MCU.
Yeah.
Or are in the MCU, but it's like they're still able to be a part of projects where it's like, hey, you know, I'm in a lot of things. I think we're kind of moving away from the Harry Potter effect where it's like, I mean, granted, there was 8 movies, but it's like,
yeah,
it's like people only know them for that one thing. It's like, I've seen plenty of movies with like, you know, the Golden Trio from the Harry Potter and other actors too. But like, yeah, for a lot of people, I mean, to me, he's always going to be Harry Potter, you know, like that crew is always going to be like, well, that's Hermione Granger, even though, you know, whatever. But I like how these actors, or at least the younger actors, when it's talking specifically like Austin Butler, Timothy Chalamet, Zendaya, Florence Pugh, they're able to kind of just hop around and just really just do what they want to do. It's like, yeah, you recognize them from other stuff, but it's like they don't stay in one place for too long.
Mm-mm. And I like that too.
I think that's what you have to do nowadays. Like everyone knows, I mean, Zendaya came from, you know, Disney Channel, so it's like, it's crazy.
She's killing it. She's become like the fashion icon of our generation. Like, I'm just so proud of everything that she's done. And like the fact that she's like even producer on Euphoria, like she's really challenging herself. And I think that's incredible for her. I love what they're doing. And I think that the more they become mainstream, they can bring in the fans to watch like Euphoria, to watch a Bob Dylan biopic, to watch the Bike Riders, and you know what I mean? Like, I think that that's what's so incredible about this is like you're becoming a fan for life. Like, even to branch out, like a Barry Keoghan, a Jacob Elordi, like you have them doing these indie films, but they're so like accessible to the general audience that they're going to give the indie film a go too. And I think that's what's awesome about this at the end of the day is that, of course, you can do a mixture of a blockbuster and like a hit television show, but then also do these independent films that like, you know, is going to get a new audience because your star's in it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And it's more of, even with, Millie Bobby Brown. Wow. I don't know why it took me so long. Go. We were just talking about Damsel before we.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, she's been produced like on her own films as well. And it's like, you know, they want to be known for, like, I think they're trying to build careers, or not even that. It's just, so even with like Millie Bobby Brown or like any of the younger actors in Dune Part 2, it's almost like, God, I had the thought in my head. They're trying to get people to recognize their name. Like, I don't know if it's like a movie star thing, but I'm glad that people are like, you know, following these actors and actresses, because it's like you want to see like where they came from, like their first film ever. Like,
it's
so cool to like go back and like see where they came from and like go through their entire filmography instead of it just being all one franchise, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, because then you see them grow. And evolve into something. I like, it's pure example. Like, my first film of like Timothée Chalamet that I can remember, he was obviously in Interstellar, but like, I don't count that. Like, that was the first time that I saw him in a movie.
He was in Interstellar. I did not know that.
but that's what I'm saying. Like, no one knows he was in Interstellar, right? Yeah. It's like, you go back and you're like, oh shit, like he plays the son, and you don't realize that. So technically it's like, that's his first like film that I remember watching him in. But for me, it's always going to be Call Me By Your Name that really showed me how incredible of an actor he is. So it's like, Timmy and I were the same age, and it hits different watching an actor that's like your age, and you know that he's going to have longevity as a movie star, and like you're growing with him and you're supporting him. And I think that's what's incredible about this for all of them, is that even like with Sydney Sweeney and, you know, Tom Holland too, we can add that to the mix. Like, we're watching them grow, and we're like around the same age range as they are, you know? So it's
special. That is true. Yeah. It's like, even like when you're a kid, it's like, obviously, you know, you, like, you get exposed to certain films that, like, your your parents watch. But it's usually, you know, the Denzel Washington's, Leonardo DiCaprio's. It's usually, like, they're older. So you don't really have, like, the people it's that different. You want to follow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or not even the people that you want to follow. It's just, you know, when you're, gosh, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years old, there's not a lot of child actors out there.
No, but it's also, you're not going to be, like, you're not going to have that yet, because they're still like your age at the same time. Like, for me, I guess the earliest one that I would say would be Zac Efron, that I followed him.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Like, he's only, sure, I think, 3 or 4 years older than us. And it's like that, he's the only one that I can think of where, like, he was a child actor and, like, that was, that was it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's very true. I mean, of course, Josh Peck, Oppenheimer, Oppie.
He's an Oppie.
He got to press the big red button. I was like, okay, that was pretty awesome. But yeah, it's cool. Like, it's really cool to see that. So it's like, God, this movie was just incredible. I gotta go see it again. It's amazing.
Yeah, same. I'm trying to bring as many people as I can to go watch it in IMAX.
It's got to be in 70 millimeter as well.
You can't watch it in regular. Like, it's impossible. No.
Yeah. I think Josh Brolin had said it, like, he said it in an interview. He's like, see it in IMAX, see it in IMAX, see it in IMAX, see it. You have to, like, even if it's just standard IMAX, it doesn't have to be 70 millimeter, because not every theater carries that, especially in the US. I'm not sure how it is in Canada, but we do not have a lot of them here. But luckily, I live in a city where I live like 10 minutes away from it. So it's like, that was really awesome. But it's cool to also hear, like, the film going in the back. Like, you don't get that a lot. And I think the last time I saw that was the first time I experienced 70 millimeter IMAX was with Oppenheimer. Same. And I was like, it was.
Listen, it just hits different.
It does.
I can't even. It's only like a couple of inches on the top and the bottom.
In the bottom.
For 70 millimeter.
Yeah, but it makes a world of difference.
Because you're getting this incredible, like, height that you're not, like, it feels like, this is going to sound so weird, but it feels like a 4:3 aspect ratio.
Oh, yeah,
Do you get what I'm saying? It feels that way. And you're just, like, in the movie. Like, obviously, in IMAX, you're always, like, you feel like you're in the movie. But this time, you feel like you're there with Oppenheimer. You feel like you're there in Arrakis. Like, it just hits different. The image quality is absolutely spectacular. Like, I cannot praise this thing enough. It's amazing.
Yeah, the sound, everything about it. You're just like, wow. And it cuts between like 70 millimeter and standard, but like I would say for maybe a good like 65 to like 70% of the movie was like in full 70 millimeter. And it's just like, especially the big battles, you're just like, wow.
He played around with it. Again, it comes down to the scale of Arrakis and what he wanted to show.
Yeah.
So I like that he did those changes.
It felt like a real place. It did. Dude, I was like,
it's like I would literally go there. Yeah.
I couldn't. I'm like, where did you film this? Like, where? Where did you go, Denis, to film this?
I don't know what he did.
I was like, this just looks like not a pixel out of sight. I was like, oh. Every time I watch like Dune 1 and part 2, I'm like, I just feel like I'm there. I don't know what it is.
It just, you feel like, I can't even explain the feeling of watching like Dune 1 and Dune 2. Like, it just, I can't even explain it. It's so overwhelming and you just get like so gassed like watching part 1 and part 2. And it also comes down to like Hans Zimmer's score. I think that just is...
hits it home.
Oh my God. Like, without it, some scenes, like, they're nothing without it. I'm going to be honest. Like, it
hits. No, I agree. Did you watch part one before, like, rewatch part one before? Did you see it again in theaters or no?
No, I bought the 4K. Same. And it was the first time I actually watched the 4K on my TV. And I was like,
same. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, you know what? 4K is still incredible image quality. So I'm like, obviously it's not IMAX, but like watching it at home, I was like, dude, even the 4K is just on another level. Yeah. I know.
Yeah. I have an OLED television. I was like, yeah. I was gonna watch it at some point. And and I was like, yeah, this is actually, that was my first time like popping it in. Same. My 4K player.
It's gorgeous. I was
like, this is it's amazing. I wish I would have seen it in theaters because I know they were doing it for like a short time.
Yeah.
I was like, man, but it made a little bit of money, but I think Dune Part 2 is going to hit a billion.
Oh, it has
to. Or close to.
No, it has to. Like, they have to keep it in theaters for as long as they can just to make up for the fact that they kind of snaked Legendary for Dune Part 1. Because they did snake them. I think that was, like, the big controversy there, right?
That's right. Yeah, because during 2020, Warner Brothers was like, surprise, we're doing the whole hybrid thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Denis and everyone was like, what? So like,
no.
even then, Dune Part 1 like killed it at the Oscars.
I know. And I think that like, obviously, as we were talking about this before, like I'm already thinking of next year's Oscars because I don't think nothing is coming close to Dune Part 2 at all. And everyone's like, but it's so early. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's the third month of the year.
It's not early because you know what else came out? I think it was in March. Everything Everywhere All at Once.
It did. That won Best Picture. Exactly. So I'm like, what are you guys talking about? It's not early. Like the second we start thinking about Oscars for 2025, it starts January 1st. Like I don't understand what like people are so rattled about. It's like, no. We know when a movie hits, like the second I watched Oppenheimer, I'm like, it's done. Like, lock it up, everyone go home. Like, it's done. I knew it the second I walked out of there, and I still felt that with Dune Part 2. So, when you know, you know. And I don't even know what's coming out this year that could even come close to, like, it taking gold away from Dune Part 2.
Yeah. And this Warner Brothers, I mean, you know, say what you will about Warner Brothers. We've had our issues with them. But, I mean, amidst of all the controversy of, like, you know, with David Zaslav and, like, how they're running the company, like, I mean, Barbie hit $1 billion.
Barbie hit the billy, man. Like, and I think that's kudos to Margot Robbie more so than Warner Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
just because it's just like, no, we're going to keep this day. And they did. They listened to her. And if they didn't listen to her, I think it would have been a very different outcome. Because technically, like, the fans marketed both films for Warner Brothers and Universal at that point.
Yeah,
which is crazy. And I'm saying they didn't market it because technically, Oppie, you didn't really do much. There was just a timer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I didn't really see. And it's
Christopher Nolan. Like, of course.
And it's Nolan. Exactly. Yeah. So it's like the fans really did what they did for Barbenheimer to even happen and for them to both, well, Barbie hit the billy and Oppie didn't.
Regardless, which still blows my mind. Both did. But it's weird because I got the 4K for both. I got Oppenheimer through award season, and I actually was not expecting it. But I did a Blu-ray 4K Blu-ray review for Barbie, and just looking at not just like the image quality, but like the other like special features, the assets that come with it. Oppenheimer comes with like over 3 hours of like special features, like
it's amazing
deleted scenes, stuff like that. Barbie has none of that. Barbie has like a few special featurettes, and then that's it. It didn't really they didn't package it with anything. And we actually learned today, as this recording of March 4th, I almost said 3rd, that apparently there's not going to be there's not going to be any deleted scenes on the Dune Part 2 Blu-ray release, which that's kind fine. Of and I think it's fine. It's just I guess as a I mean, we're both physical media collectors. So I'm just like, man, give me something. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be a deleted scene. Because sometimes we're like, why wasn't this in the movie? kind of thing. But I'm sure that, I mean, Denis had to make a lot of tough choices, even with, forgot the guy's name. Hold on one second. I need to find it. Stephen McKinley's character. He was not in part two.
Yes, I know who you're talking about. Yes, yes, yes.
And I know that was a difficult decision because I kind of read into his side plot with Dune. And I was like, I feel like that would have hurt the pacing of the film.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. I think there were already so many characters, and then you had to introduce like Fade, and you had to introduce Cerulean and the Emperor. Like, I think it was excessive, especially because you're starting like new characters, you know what I mean? And even the new characters didn't have that many scenes as well. But the scenes that they did have worked. I'm not saying it didn't, or else I would have given it like less than I did. But yeah, it's hard to do that. And I know Denis is like, he's not a fan of deleted scenes. He's like, this is the movie that I'm putting out. No one needs to watch anything else. So like, even on his other films, he's like, I don't have to do the deleted scenes, which is interesting.
Yeah, then you have, and that's fine.
You have a filmmaker of like Zack Snyder who has like 5 hours worth of footage, and you're like, I want to see it too. Like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it depends, I guess, on the director.
That's true. Even with like the Lord of the Rings, like the original extended cut for Blu-ray.
I still
like,
have to do
we that. Had, well, like they have like a lot of like appendices and stuff, because like you have the movies on the Blu-ray disc, and there's a lot of like DVDs for each movie with like these appendices. So there's so much that went with that, with that special features and stuff for the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Like, you're really not going to get that as much anymore. It kind of sucks because I feel like a lot of like the featurette stuff, like, you can just find on YouTube. But it would have been cool for like a making of for Dune or something, kind of like Disney Plus. Like, if HBO Max did this, but for like movies like Dune or like any other, or like Barbie, that'd be cool. Even. Because, like, you know, Disney Plus does, like, oh, the making of what, like, they do it for, like, every, like, Marvel show. I'm like, that is, or they did it for Percy Jackson as well.
They
did. And for Willow. And I was like, that's so cool.
But it was like, awesome, you know, that they did that.
Just put that on the physical media. Put that
it's like, but that's the thing. It's like these streaming services, they're greedy in certain cases. And they're like, but why would I like want to put that on a physical media? Like, it doesn't.
I'm paying for it. No,
no, but it's true. Like, it's so frustrating because we like collecting them, and if we love the movie so much, we're obviously gonna buy it. You know what I mean? So it's just, they don't know what they're doing. I mean, they do, business perspective wise.
Not really, but
no, it's okay.
Trust me. Give me the Warner Brothers seat. Give me that David Zaslav. I'm gonna shake some things up.
It's like, we have to talk.
I'm going to take over his position and just, I'm telling you, we're going to have Dune spinoffs, but not we need all the Dune, but not all at once. And I know Denis has stated that he is writing Messiah, but he doesn't want to just like, okay, on to the next one.
Yeah.
Like, he wants to take his time with it. I'm like, dude, take your time. Like, it's been 4 years since Dune Part 2. I can wait another 4 to 5 years. I will wait.
Yeah, and I think Messiah is so heavy. It's so heavy, Messiah. It needs to be the right script. And also, if it takes longer, the actors are going to get older, and it would make more sense for that to be, like, his... You know what I mean? Like, he wants to do, I think, another 2 or 3 films in between. So we get like, what he's been reading, I don't know. But it's like,
so do you think is it a time jump between Dune and Dune Messiah, or does it just get straight in?
It's straight in. But it just, considering what the story is, it would make sense if they age. So I don't mind. At least I'd say 4 years.
Four or five years. 4 or 5 years. Yeah.
I'm cool with that.
No less. Yeah.
Because if he's going to reach that level of, oh my God. If he's going to reach that level of perfection again, then work, buddy. Just work. Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah. And then, you know, on to something else. Because I would love, like, obviously, I want him to continue. I want him to work on Dune as much as he can, but I also want to see other stuff from him as well. But it's great, great stuff. But we've been talking for a while. But let's get into this kind of like final thoughts of the film. I'll pass it back over to you. And while you're at it, after you give your final thoughts, let everyone know where they can find you, because it's been amazing, of course, as always, having you on. It was a great conversation. Yeah. I didn't know where this conversation was going to go.
No, I know. And I'm like, whoa, it's an hour. It's like, whoa, we covered a lot. We talked a lot of topics, all because of Dune Part 2. What I can say is that this movie deserves multiple viewings. At least one of them should be in 70mm. It's hard to go back to a regular screen after it, but just definitely go multiple times. This is such a phenomenal film. It's a monumental moment for these young stars. And it's a monumental moment for Denis Villeneuve and his career. And I think that's really important for all of us to just take note of that. It's a big deal for him to cement himself as like the greatest sci-fi director of all time, and that comes with like technological advancements as well, that he's allowed to tap into different visuals with, you know, his DP Greg Fraser. I think this is going to be like the perfect sci-fi film. It's going to be like textbook for years to come, and I think that it's going to be the new blueprint, which is absolutely incredible that it's Denis Villeneuve, one of the greatest working directors of our generation. I think that he's absolutely incredible and deserves like all the recognition for this. Let's get Dune Part 2 to a billion just to retcon what happened with Dune Part 1. I think that Warner Brothers needs to just see that they have a hit on their hands, and I think they already do. But we just need to get this to $1 billion for the sake of Denis Villeneuve and the Dune universe. So this was amazing, Christian. Thank you so much for having me on for this. I want everyone to read Dune Messiah right after and just like freak out with me because it's heavy. But you guys can always follow me over at AMXNDA Reviews on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. And you can check out my website, CandidXCinema.com, and my YouTube, Candid Cinema.
All right. Yeah, I thank you again for coming on. It's really, it's always a great conversation for sure. It's just, Amanda said, this is a technical masterpiece, like in every phrase. It's just amazing. See it in IMAX, please. It is suited for the IMAX experience. It's formatted for IMAX. Like, this is a carefully like crafted spectacle. I think we're supposed to get I think they're supposed to re-release Dune Part 1 with the IMAX ratio, I think.
Yeah, they could have done...
I saw like it somewhere on Twitter.
I think they're doing like a back-to-back, like Part 1, Part 2 movie-going experience.
I'll buy it again. I don't care.
Oh yeah, I'll absolutely go. 5 hours.
Yeah.
5 hours. I don't care. I'll do it.
Yeah. But seriously, for anyone, like a lot of people was talking like at work and they're like, oh yeah. They're like, oh, Part 2. Like my friend Colin, he didn't see Part 1. He tried to watch like a 5-minute video beforehand.
No. And what are you doing?
He wanted to watch Part 1 beforehand, but he's pretty busy. He's got a pretty busy schedule. I'm like, well, I guess we can watch it. I'll be like, I'll watch Part 1 again, you know, like, you know, and I'm interested to go back to Part 1, knowing that everything happens in Part 2, because it's much like with Into and Across the Spider-Verse. Like, Into the Spider-Verse is a phenomenal movie. I'm not saying Part 1 isn't good, it's just that Part 2 enhances Part 1 so much. Yeah. So like after I watched Across the Spider-Verse, I think it was like a few weeks later, I went back and watched Into the Spider-Verse and I had a newfound appreciation for it. And it's go see Dune Part 2 in IMAX. And of course, all of the go follow Amanda on all the social media garbage that we have out there. I'll have her links in the description of this podcast episode. And with all that said, that does conclude today's episode. If you enjoy what you heard, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on your preferred podcast platform of choice. Make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at Film Optics. That is Optics with an X. And don't forget to share an episode of our podcast with a fellow movie lover, whether it be your mother, your brother, or your significant other. Spread the love for the Film Optics podcast. And really quick, what's for new review releases that we have out right now? As I mentioned earlier, you can listen to our Dune Part 2 spoiler-free review that Devin and I covered. It's about 30-ish minutes. This one, obviously, much longer. You can also check out our Avatar The Last Airbender Netflix series review. That is full spoilers because, yeah, it's been out for 20 years. So this is the Netflix series version. It's fun. Also, definitely check out our Madam Web review. And yeah, there's that. And we did like a most anticipated movies of 2024 episode, and Dune Part 2 is my number one. I was nervous. I was a little nervous. I'm like, oh man, like, can he follow this up? And yeah, I was blown away. So definitely check out those reviews that we have out right now. And for upcoming, we're going to be covering like Invincible Season 2 Part 2, and I will be doing a quick review of Damsel. That will be streaming on Netflix. I believe that is also produced by Millie Bobby Brown, if I'm not mistaken. She is out there making that money, as she should be. But with all that said, again, thank you, Amanda, for coming on. And thank you again for all of our listeners out there. Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, please take a moment to leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And stay connected with us by following us on Twitter for the latest updates. That was Amanda, and I'm Christian, signing off. And remember, let the spice flow.